I think it's good that things go on as much as close to normal as we can get them, but it's just, with so much happening, it just feels weird. It feels weird to talk about this episode of this TV show when there's all this terrible real life stuff going on. Even though I want to do it, I mean, I want it, and I want it to be fun, and I want the fun of it. It just somehow feels out of place.
Yeah, but you got to think of the alternative. Like, you could do nothing and just be, like, just feel bad about things, or you can, you know, try to make some entertainment and joy, you know, bring happiness to people.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree with what you're saying. I just, it's been a hard week for stuff like that. Hearing about Robin Williams last night was horrible. It was horrible. It was like stunning.
So I met Robin Williams once. Unknowingly, I went to his house. Might be a good way to start the podcast. I might even leave this in. But yeah, his wife, his second wife, Marsha Williams, was the nanny he married.
Mm-hmm.
She called up my company. My company makes alternate fuel vehicles, and at the time we were making electric cars. And she calls up and she goes, "Can you come? My name's Marsha. Can you come to my name's Marsha Williams, actually," she said. "And can you come to my house and show us your car?" And she was in San Francisco. I'm in Santa Rosa. It's like 60 miles away. So it's kind of like somebody calling a car dealer and saying, "Hey, come on over and show me your new car. I want to take a look at it." Like, I said, "Well, yeah, we'd like to show it to you, but you should come to us because we, you know, we don't usually bring cars to people." And she goes, "Well, if I like it, I'll buy it." And I'm like, "Okay, what's your address?" So I went, and they were in downtown San Francisco, which, of course, as you know, San Francisco is really super hilly. So we drove, I went down there, and I met them. And I didn't know at the time it was Marsha Williams, wife of Robin Williams. So I went to their house, and it's on this really cool street in San Francisco, Broadway and Steiner, the intersection. And it's like a really super steep street. And I get in there, I go in their little foyer, and they have like these giant iguanas in a big tank in their foyer, and they're like outside their living room. Like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And she welcomes me in. I sit down, I start talking to her, and Robin Williams walks in, and I put two and two together, like Marsha Williams, she's married to Robin Williams.
It took that long. Yeah, that's funny.
Well, I had to see him. I mean, Williams isn't distinct of a name, so. But yeah,
no,
he comes over
and
he was really shy, and he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" And he shook my hand, and they had a kid, I guess, and the kid liked these iguanas or reptiles or whatever they were. But thinking back on it, it seemed like the perfect house for Robin Williams. You know, it has a little quirk to it, like it has these reptiles in the front foyer. And I don't know, that was my brush with greatness with Robin Williams. So they ended up buying this car, and then we built this car. They wanted a big, like, SUV, so we built, like, a Blazer, and it didn't make it up the hill of Broadway and Steiner because it was such a steep hill. So they ended up having to get a different car.
Oh, that's sad.
I mean, they got one from us, but they couldn't get the big one that they wanted.
Oh, okay. Okay, they had to get a smaller one that would make it up their hill. That's pretty good.
Yeah, you got to snap out of the sad mode, Michelle. Everything has a happy ending.
Everything does?
Everyone's going to die, you know? Well, I was waiting for you. I was looking online, and Lauren Bacall died today.
I just heard that just a few minutes ago.
It's pretty cool, though. I looked up the, while I was waiting for you to make your connection, I have to get that shot in on you. I looked up looked up her career, and they played they didn't play it, but the New York Times posted the article from 1944, the review of To Have and Have Not, when it came out, as if it was like an article today.
Did they really?
Just like, you know, they just reposted the 1944 review of To Have and Have Not.
Aw, that's pretty fun.
It's really cool. It's like, you know, well, they're doing a movie based on Mr. Hemingway's story of the same name. Like, you know, those people are all just in the prime of their careers at that point in 1944. It's like, to have and have not is Casablanca moved west into the somewhat less hectic Caribbean. You know,
well, I stopped and looked at the lyrics to Key Largo, because I always think about that time I think about Lauren Bacall for some reason. That is it Bertie Higgins, I guess, song.
Oh, God. You're going to drag this down to that?
What? I love that. How could that be bad?
God.
What was it? Like a 1980, 81 or something?
It's like a Christopher Cross song. It's like garbage.
No.
Anyway, the guy who wrote this article was Bosley Carruther. And what a perfect name for 1944, huh? He's a writer for the New York Times. Bosley Carruther.
That's a great name.
But apparently, so I looked him up. I had lots of time to look people up during this delay. But I looked him up, and he was like a kind of a he was kind of a star maker back then. Like, if he wrote about you, you know, you were having a good chance of being a big star.
Well, that's pretty cool.
But anyway, what the hell were you here for, Michelle? Talking about Orange is the New Black.
I think that's it. Season 2, episode 10.
Little Mustachioed Shit.
Yeah, that's it.
So, my name is Mike. I'm here with Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
We're here from West Coast Project doing Orange is the New Black. And Michelle, I'm a little bit podcasted out. I've done two other podcasts in the last 2 days.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I'm trying to catch up on I'm trying to catch up on the Better Call Saul, my Better Call Saul project. So I'm doing the Breaking Bad episodes that had Saul in it. And of the 62 Breaking Bad episodes, Saul was in 40 of them.
Oh, wow. How long are they?
Huh?
How long are your podcasts?
I don't know, half hour to an hour. But still, you got to do it. You know, it's the same. It doesn't matter. If you and I talk for an hour and a half here, it's the same amount of work as if we talk for 20 minutes. Still have to listen and do notes and edit and.
No, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I know it's as much work. I just didn't know. I didn't know you were doing it. Is it up on West Coast Project?
Yeah. So Saul doesn't show up till season 2, episode 8, which is called Better Call Saul. So here's a little ad for Better Call Saul. If you want to listen to it, you could check it out. But it was pretty fun rewatching the Breaking Bads and then trying to pick out the points about Saul.
Oh, I bet.
So he's in like 8 and 9, and then he skips 10, and he's in 11, season 2, 11. So, of course, I have to watch 10. You can't go from 9 right to 11. I have to look at 10 and see what's going on with that. So that took time. And
But what a terrible thing to have to rewatch Breaking Bad. I would actually like to sit down and marathon, kind of. I mean, when I say marathon, I'm not hardcore, but really sit down and do maybe 5 or 6 episodes a day until I got through the whole thing.
Yeah, and you can't skip them. I mean, like episode 10 in season 2 was the one where Walt started giving Junior those shots of tequila after another, and Hank finally tried to stop him. Remember that? He got sick in the pool. Like, you got to talk about that. You can't watch that and just not say anything and go right to 11. You got to say something about that if you're doing a podcast.
I agree.
It was the one where Walt went into the store to check out the hot water heaters, and the guy's like, this is a nice one, this is a nice one. He's like, ooh, I want that tankless one. You know, and that led to all the crawl space and all that. Got to talk about that.
Oh, that's important stuff, yeah.
So anyway, I've been doing that, so. Better Call Saul, West Coast Project.
Are you going to put up a... like a little blip of it or something?
It's already up. It's all over the place, man. It's all in the usual places.
I thought you were going to put it up right now.
It's already up. It is up.
In the middle of this, put a little blip. No?
What do you mean a little blip?
I don't know. A blip. You don't have to blip. It's okay.
What are you talking about? What's a blip?
I thought you were going to do like a little sound bite here.
That's what I thought. Play some of it.
You said that. Yeah.
Oh, I could probably cut and paste something in there, but just go listen to it if you want to listen to it. I could see how Orange is the New Black fan may not necessarily be a Breaking Bad fan, so I won't force it on them.
Oh, I think they probably would.
They probably are. Yeah, they probably are. I actually, in my notes for this episode, I mistyped Piper as Skylar like three times. I got the first paragraph in. I'm like, why am I typing Skylar? You know, Skylar doesn't know V. What the hell? And then I'm like, oh, it's Piper.
That's pretty good. I can definitely see how you would do that.
So I've had Piper's nipples staring at me for the last half hour.
You and me both.
Of that first scene locked on my iPad. But yeah, me too. Here we are, West Coast Project, Orange is the New Black, episode 10, Little Mustachioed Shit. And Piper's enjoying herself some Alex in the very first scene.
She is.
She does a pretty good orgasm scene.
I've got no complaints with it. I agree.
But she says she's the boob-touching type of lesbian, not the other type.
Yeah, she says she's never went down on a woman, so.
But we see somebody kind of stalking her back in the room, and it's the girlfriend, the other girlfriend of, what's her name, Alex? Sylvia?
Sylvie is what she was calling her.
She comes in and lays one on Piper, punches her.
Well, yeah, Alex gets the phone call and leaves the room, and suddenly there's this menacing figure in the doorway who comes running toward her and jumps on top of her and punches her in the face. That would be kind of a scary situation, whether it's, something like that could happen in the same sense if Alex were a guy and was living with Sylvie.
But yeah, it happened in True Detective. Like, why does the spurned lover always blame the object of the cheater? Like, it's really, that was all Alex's fault, right? She should have run up and punched Alex.
It's 100% Alex's fault. Piper didn't even know. She didn't even know Alex had a girlfriend.
You don't
so it's
run
100%.
Up, you don't run in and punch the the other person, but that's how it always works.
It does work that way, and I think that is what people do, don't you?
Yeah, that's why I'm asked. That's what I'm saying. Why do you do that? Why is that? Like, it's just stupidity.
I don't understand why people would be mad at the person that their lover was cheating with. I've never understood that.
Right.
They're
go
not
right
the one
the
that
source.
Made a commitment to you. Yeah, they didn't make a commitment to you. They didn't promise you anything. It's the other person who's breaking the promise.
So Alex makes sure that Piper has her shoes because she doesn't want her to walk home without her shoes. Why is she making her walk home? That was shitty.
Well, I guess she had to talk to Sylvie at that point. No?
Still, you're going to make her walk home? Unless maybe she's right next door or something, but that's crappy. It's like crap on top of crap. She's going to make her walk home.
Yeah, Alex seemed to be a little more concerned with Sylvie at that point, I felt like, then with Piper.
Yeah, Piper's like second fiddle. So why did they show this particular flashback, do you think?
That's a good question. To show how close they were? I don't know. What did you think? Did you have some take on it?
Well, I think they are showing Piper. Later on, we kind of see the same thing, that there are a lot of mirrors in this episode, mirrors of different people and different things. In fact, we see one right now. Piper goes back to the prison, and Belle, she gets herself a little bit of Belle in the strip search, just like she was getting herself a little bit of Alex. Belle.
She does.
Belle likes the strip search, seemingly. But the answer
to
your question.
Yeah, kind of like to listen to phone calls. It seems the same to me.
Yeah, the answer to your question is I think it's a series of mirroring things that show up here and there. But Piper's got her perfume, and Belle has her perfume. And
she does.
To smell like a cookie.
Almond extract behind the ears. Works every time.
Yeah, there wasn't much culture shock to Piper showing back up at prison. She just like fit right back in.
Yeah, she did. I mean, I guess that didn't really strike me as odd. Did it you? That she would show back up and it feel
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Like she just rolled with it. I don't know. Maybe
she didn't even seem particularly upset. I could have seen her being a little more upset with it, maybe. But it honestly, her being out was kind of crappy. She had her freedom, certainly, but come on. She had her freedom mixed in with finding out about Larry and somebody else that she doesn't know who, and her a grandmother's funeral, and just Red's business being closed. Not fun things for that 48 hours. And even the wedding, peculiar.
Even the wedding, especially the wedding.
Maybe especially. I hated to say that, but maybe especially the wedding. It just wasn't what you would picture an ideal furlough. Not that I've ever sat down and like done a bucket list for my furlough or anything to be, but if I did, none of those things would be on the list.
Well, she gets back to her cell or to her little room, and she sees Red, and Red asks, how was it? And she says, I was felt up three times. Or she says, I was felt up three times, and Red says, how was it? She says, not enough nipple play. I didn't know that that was such a big part of getting felt up, but it's kind of a funny little joke by Red, by Piper to Red.
Yeah, it was. I think she was deflecting.
She's in a good mood. She's like chipper. She's like kind of up, you know?
She is. But she's got a belly full of food and malt liquor, and she still has probably the scent of her perfume on and all the comforts that we take for granted. But I think she's also deflecting because she knows the question that's coming, and she's kind of delaying having to answer that.
So what was that?
That was where Red asked her if she had visited the shop.
Yeah, how was the store?
Yeah, and you and I had kind of talked about this, you know, touched on it a little bit last week, but what did you think? Again, did you have a different take on it or a change of opinion?
I think the same. I think they're making a little bit too big of a deal about Red and her store. And I know they want us to understand the importance of Red and her whole life and her business and her family and her sons and all that, but still, I see Red as... You can start that store in a million new places and just start again.
Yeah, I know, Mike, but she had this was something she had, and then it was gone from her. I mean, she didn't know it's gone, but now it's gone from her. And she wants to think that this thing she created is still out there nourishing and feeding and supplying her family, and I completely get her distraught and distressness, whatever, over this. I completely get it, and her worry. It's important to her.
Well, I get that it's important to her, but the only thing that's clear about it is that it needs her to work well, and as soon as she's back in society, she could just start it again and make it work anywhere else.
I suppose she could, because people obviously love the product that she produces, but she's not a young woman, and the thought of starting over sometimes, I could see how that would be completely daunting. Plus, she would have all the stress of worrying about what her children are doing, what her husband's doing, which we assume he's still alive, right? He's not visited her. So I'm kind of confused. I don't know if we're going to see something about him.
I don't know. I don't really even care. I just know that Red's a survivor, and she could rebuild whatever she had anywhere else once she gets
maybe.
Out.
I don't know. How is she going to do that?
I don't even think maybe. I think she does. I just kind of know that she can. So I don't get depressed by her thinking that her store is closed. Anyway, we've been through this. You think differently. Yeah. But Piper says, your store is great, but Larry's not so great. It's finally over, but I'm not mad. She doesn't know who Larry is with, although Larry has told her it's somebody she knows. So she thinks it's the Bikram teacher. Have you ever tried Bikram yoga?
No, I have not.
She's sexy and hot, I guess, but I haven't tried it either. But maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's... I don't even know what it entails, but maybe it entails some kind of touching or something.
Oh, I don't know. I'm gonna have to look that up now. That's pretty interesting.
Our audience is probably screaming at the TVs or the computers. But she gets a letter from Alex, which she wants to ignore, and she temporarily ignores.
And she does.
We cut through a couple scenes here. She goes to the cafeteria, and we see that extra cigarettes merit extra waffles. It's a pretty good trade.
Well, extra waffles. V's going to the front of being crazy eyes are going to the front of the line. I mean, extra everything. Then they run Rosa off from the table. They're ugly to her. I mean, they're ugly to Rosa. That had to have been a scene put in there just to allow us to dislike everything they're doing. Because how can you be ugly to Rosa at this point?
She's in the seat they want. Yeah, V's poison is spreading. Like, she makes crazy eyes very hateable, very unlikable, just by her being the muscle for V.
Yeah, she does. And we've talked about crazy eyes a lot and how much we really liked her. And V is able to turn her into this person that's totally unlikable, a bully. She turns her into a bully.
But they've cleaned Chang out, which tells us that their operations are really lucrative because they're making all kinds of money and they can buy all kinds of stuff from the commissary.
Well, right. And they're also getting back rubs. Tacy's talking about back rubs she got. And they're definitely living the high life with this. Well, we think at this point, I think that it's just, well, we know it's not just tobacco, but with whatever they're trading.
Yeah, drugs.
Definitely. Yeah, I didn't know if we knew that. Did we get that last time, I think?
We saw Nikki get some samples of it.
Last episode, yeah.
So
whatever's going on.
We also learn a little bit more about Sophia. Her son's coming to visit, and she says that he was ashamed of her, and he was the one that turned her in. I
wondered about that back when we watched it, when he was the one sitting on the steps as they were leading her out.
Yeah, what did she do? You know, I was about to brag that I could tell you what every one of these characters did to get thrown in jail.
You remember. You just have a lot of Breaking Bad on the brain.
No, I looked them all up. Sophia, let me see. She went to prison for credit card fraud.
Right. She did the credit card fraud. Remember, she was the firefighter who would go in the houses and steal the information. Sophia and Red are going through the commissary line or the cafeteria line. And we went over that whole thing about Sophia's son coming to visit and all that. And, this is where Sophia says she's going to let him sit down and vent at her to make him feel better because she hasn't talked to him or anything since this happened. And Red said she would kick him to death. But she goes, but we all parent a little differently. That was kind of funny how she mentioned that.
Yeah, and I guess next we see Soso giving out hunger advice on how it's what Gandhi used to do.
Yeah, and how she's upset that not even the sister's with her, and she thought the sister was an activist.
Is her shower strike officially over, forced to be over now?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, did she just, like, take one shower? Was it one and we're happy? Are we going to have to force her again? They never really played upon that anymore.
Yeah,
or did she decide, okay, I'm going to succumb to this torture of clean water? I don't know.
So Nikki and Piper are talking about that letter that Alex sent. Why doesn't Piper throw this one away? She just misses her?
Well, that, I think. And also, it's just like she said, well, she told her. She told Nikki why she didn't throw it away, I think, had something to do with Larry. The Larry thing's over. And she knows that now, and it's more concrete to her. I think that she kind of gave up Alex in there because of Larry?
So now she's holding on to Alex a little bit more tightly because she thinks Larry's gone?
Yeah, it kind of sucks, but don't you think that's what we as humans do a little bit, maybe?
Could be.
Hold on. I don't know. That's just what I took from it, because Larry's gone, so she's going to hang on to this letter. Maybe she'll read it. Maybe she won't. But I think she's glad it's there. But she talks to Nikki, and she's afraid that if she opens it and reads it, that Alex is going to be able to schmooze her way back into her life like she always has with her lies.
Yeah.
And, of course, right after that conversation, we go to a flashback, which is kind of exactly what happens.
And what happens?
Well, it's the flashback to Piper sitting in the bar that Alex is at. And she goes up and says hello to her, and Alex apologizes and goes into all this that she's not a shady person and that kind of thing. And they kind of quip back and forth. Piper says she's never been punched before. It was probably good for her. And Alex does this whole cutesy kind of, I don't understand relationship rules. And it's just crap. It's just complete crap. And then Piper plays on it and says rules are no fun anyway. And then she does this thing. It's a horrible thing Piper did, where she says if Sylvie is Alex's true love, then she'll back off. But then she gets up close to her and does this woman thing and gets really sexual with her. She's
what
never
do you mean? What's
her...
a woman thing?
Well, it's a just like men can, I'm sure. Maybe it's not specific to women, but she does the woman thing where she does this. I mean, she seduces her. She's never viewed herself as a very sexual person. And then she gets up in her ear and says that she wants to taste her after that conversation that they had just had in bed.
Yeah, she did that to Larry too, not like a day or two before, right? She was like, she's looking for love. I was just about to ask you, what's the point of these flashbacks? And maybe I just figured that out, that's she's hungry for being connected with somebody.
Well, and maybe that's the mirror of that as well, kind of you're talking about. I mean, it wasn't in this episode, but it's kind of the mirror of her seduction.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. It's very unappealing, though. It's like they're both very beautiful women, but just that whole connection between them just wasn't appealing. They're going into a bathroom of a bar, and I don't know. It just was kind of a turnoff.
Well,
don't let me speak for you, though, Michelle.
Well, well, that specifically, yeah, wasn't it either. But the seduction and the passion, that's not a good thing to do necessarily if she thinks Alex is still in this relationship.
Right.
With Sylvie. I mean, she's really, it's like a one-upsman to Sylvie. I don't know.
Right. Now now she's in territory where she should get punched.
Thank you. Yes, she is.
So next we see Mendez at the cafeteria, and he asks Red what they're serving, and Mendez, if he's good for nothing else, he's really good at ripping off these insults and clever. I don't know if he could do it without writers helping him, but what are they serving, Red? Humble pie, crow, high horse hamburger, egg on your face, hat?
It was mocking. It was really mocking her. Yeah. And she asked if he had been practicing. And then he slaps her on the butt.
That's a pretty good comeback, though. Have you been practicing? Like, she throws it right back in his face.
Yeah, Red don't take a lot. Which you got to admire.
And he sees Bennett and calls him Benarino, calling his buddy Bennett Benarino.
You know, I kind of think I figured out why he's so happy. We kind of touched on this last time, too, when he came back. And he's just so almost maniacal in his ways now. It seems really over the top. And I think he's happy. And I didn't really remember that before, even though, of course, I've seen it before. I didn't remember from last episode why. But in this episode, when he sees Daya, I think he is just so happy.
And yeah, I think they're also making him look comical, as comicals can be right before, you know, he's going to be gone.
Maybe. I don't disagree with that. But I think that this is his just excited, happy mode.
Maybe.
He's never been happy.
This show's supposed to be a comedy. Orange is the New Black is a comedy, so he's a pretty good comedic foil in the mix of things. So Fig doesn't like the newspaper, the Big House Bugle. It's got a cover story on Caputo. It's got a few things she doesn't like. She doesn't like the pig in high heels. Chapman is inmate in chief. I don't know if that actually is her letterhead on the, or her title, her masthead on the newspaper, or if she's just saying that to be funny, but Chapman is inmate in chief.
Yeah, I don't think that's anywhere, because remember, they talked about that a lot, about how they didn't want to put one person over the other person or all that. So I think that's just Fig's take on it. But see, she's the, well, Caputo, I think, caught it too, but she and Caputo are the only ones wise enough to catch that they're showing the mockery of these cartoons. She catches that Healy is the walrus, and she wants to know who Caputo thinks is the pig in the high heels with the money bags. She knows. She's not stupid.
Well, plus she's the only woman. I mean, it's pretty clear it's her.
Yeah, but it would be clear it was her if there were... Well, no, she's not the only woman. There's other women.
Not in her role as manager, though.
No, but it was a pig. There's Bale. There was Fisher.
Yeah, but they're not going to be holding the money. It's her. It's so obviously her.
Right. But I mean, it is obvious, and it's insulting, but it was kind of obvious about the walrus and Healy too, wasn't it? Or no?
Not to him. Because
I thought they said that was obvious.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not to him. Or maybe he liked it. Maybe he's just a dope. But Caputo tells Fig that Di is pregnant, and that's both good news to both of them, because now they can get rid of him.
Fig, yeah, but she doesn't want anything said until she can get ahead of it.
Yeah,
she's always thinking.
She wants to squelch it.
And he says he'll, you know, go along with that as long as he's the one that gets to fire him when the time comes. He hates him.
Yeah, that's a real healthy motivation. I'll do whatever you want as long as you let me fire him. I get to fire the execution shot. So Healy's at the psychiatrist talking about his Russian mail order wife. She asked him some good questions, like why a Russian? Why'd you pick a Russian wife? Like, I don't know why a psychologist would ever need to know this. It seems like almost an improper question. But he says that mail order sites said Eastern European or Oriental were the best choices.
Yeah. He gets so angry in these scenes with this counselor. Is she a psychiatrist or a counselor? Do you know? Do we know?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. She's in that position, that role.
That I'm uncomfortable. The scenes make me uncomfortable to watch. And I watched it a couple times to see if I was just feeling weird. And I don't think I am. I get uncomfortable watching his aggression. It's kind of like when he yelled at his Russian wife. It was just, and people are going to get mad, and they're going to raise their voice, and that happens, but it was just over the top, just crossed the line of uncomfortableness, and it bothers me to see him doing this with these women. I don't know if I'm the only person that feels that way.
It was kind of interesting, though. He says to the psychologist, you know, why are you questioning me so hard? You probably have no love life. And she skips a beat. She pauses a beat. So it makes us think, like, oh, he's probably right. But yeah, I made notes. Like, Healy's on a thin line of sanity here. Like, he claims that he helps people, but he's doing all of this. He's doing all of this to self-aggrandize himself, to satisfy what he needs, for people to like him and for him to feel good. He's not doing anything to help people.
Yeah, but don't you think that goes back to that chicken and egg thing? I mean, why do any of us do good for other people specifically? I mean, it's because it feels good to do good, so then it makes it a selfish act to do good. If we only did things that were painful to us to help other people.
Yeah, I can see that. I can make the distinction, though, and I think you probably could too if you really think about it. I do some things that I know they make me feel good to help the person, but I also know that it makes the person feel good. just feel happy or feel safer or feel like a little bit more comfort. I mean, even your pet or something, you do something for your dog that like nobody will see it. Nobody will know but him, you know, but it makes him feel better. You know, you do something sometimes just because it's for the other being.
And, of course you do. And I get completely what you're saying. I just, he is like this person who wants the recognition, I think, for doing the good.
Yeah.
It's not just,
it's selfish.
It's not just, yeah, it's not just to feel good, because I do think that we all do things, at least in part, because it feels good to do the good thing, but he does it for the recognition of doing it, and he wants to make sure other people know that he's the one helping. Plus he wants the accolades.
He betrays that line of thought, because that's what he says. I'm the one helping people, you know. We've talked about this. You don't say it if you really have to say it. It's harder right. to believe that you really mean it than if you just
right,
do
it. Right. That I'm a good guy. I've cannot imagine a situation, unless you met a little child somewhere that was hurt and afraid of you, why you would need to utter the words in your lifetime, I'm a good guy. Maybe I'm not thinking of all scenarios, but it's usually pretty apparent when someone's a good guy, and you wouldn't need to say it. But he is determinedly saying that he helps people. He does it all day long.
I just hope that psychologist has some kind of a crowbar or a baseball bat under her chair, because Healy looks like he's on the edge of flipping out whenever he's with her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It crosses a line with me that makes me really uncomfortable, like the screaming at his wife and like him turning his back on the Pennsylvania Piper fight. It's things that really kind of stir something in me that feels wrong. I mean, it just feels really out of place, and I don't like him. I don't like watching those scenes with him.
So next we see Suzanne trying to mail stamps out of prison, and she's wondering how many stamps it takes to mail stamps.
That is a great question. And why would you mail stamps out of prison?
Well, they're going out to people who can sell them at like half price. It's kind of the Gloria deal, like getting the money okay. from the government. Take stamps are worth whatever in 1987 they were worth, 28 cents, and probably sell them for 14 cents. And you take that cash, and it comes back in, you get the commissary, and you get money, and, you know, they're just turning it.
Wow, Mike, you've got this all figured out.
Well, it's
really
pretty logical.
What they were doing.
Stamps aren't worth anything to prisoners. They're not mailing out 1,000 letters. You know, they're churning it for cash. And so that's what she's trying to do, is get them out. Otherwise, why would she be mailing them? She could just give them to whoever she wanted to in the prison.
Right. That's a great point. I didn't follow through with all that.
So Poussey asked Tasty about selling drugs, why she's doing it, that she claims they're all brainwashed by V. And Tasty calls her a bougie bitch, bourgeoisie bitch. Bourgeoisie, like the French aristocrats, the wealthy. And the guards bust in for a search, and Nikki has to hide her heroin. She it looked like she was really worried, but it was pretty easy for her to hide that heroin. But they find the tampon cigarettes, and they send Watson to the shoe for having the tampons with the cigarettes. And Watson looks to V to save her, but V just stands there, stone faces her.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What did you think she was expecting from V at that point?
An argument, or a, hey, give her a break, or come on, take me instead, or something. But V just...
Would that have worked at all?
Maybe not, but it was like the fight. You know, I'm like, that sister lady has to help her in the fight, and you're like, well, she's going to get her ass kicked. It doesn't matter if it's going to help. She's going to get her ass kicked when V would have gotten in trouble, but she has to try to help.
Well, I completely agree in the fight thing, because that was... wrong. This was them catching them doing something wrong, and the only thing V would have been able to do then is put a target on her own back. I mean, her saying anything would
give her a
have
break. Come on, give her a break. Cut her some slack. She won't do it again. Take them away. I mean, anything.
Nobody's gonna say that when they're in there doing that. I don't think anybody would have said that. And I was surprised that Watson would have expected.
I wasn't. V's the leader. V's supposed to be the protector. You know, she's the head of the tribe.
She is. But she's not, by being the leader and the protector and the chief, she's not going to want the target on her back.
All right. Well, that's why they put it in there. They made a point of it being something that the girls didn't like. And she looked like surprised that V didn't do anything to help her.
Yeah. And I completely got that. And I got her look at V and all that. I just don't really know what she expected, and I thought that was unrealistic as far as expecting somebody else to do it.
Mendez is picking on Daya and finds that she has his card, and he's kind of leering over her and says she looks softer. And Daya just looks like this affection is smarmy. She like doesn't look like she wants any of it at all.
But why did she keep his card?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask if my interpretation there was correct. Does she think he's smarmy or does she like him?
I think she thinks he's smarmy and I think she likes him. She kept his card. And I did not notice that until, I mean, I didn't notice it, obviously, but I didn't think about the significance of that until I watched this just a couple days ago when I was doing these notes. She kept his card. Why would you do that?
She's needy. She needs that. She needs Bennett to do all the stupid stuff that would get him in big trouble just to prove to her that she's pretty. And she's a head case too.
And she's young. I think a lot of times that kind of stuff comes with youth, don't you?
I think she's a head case. I don't think it's because of youth.
Okay.
I mean, would your 16-year-old daughter, would you want her to be like that just because she's young?
Okay. I don't have a 16-year-old anymore. She turned 17.
Okay.
Since we've been
if
here,
somebody so had a 16-year-old daughter, would you want her to say, would you want to excuse it because she's young? Or would you say, come on, get your head together?
Oh, absolutely not. There's no excuse for it. I just would like to think Daya's going to outgrow it. Because I like Daya. I want to like her. I like most of her. And I would like to attribute it to her youth. And I would hate to think she's going to turn out like her mom. I don't know. I'm pulling.
Yeah, but she should know better. She's more than 16. She's not really a youth. She's just a head case.
Me.
Okay, the next, the guards are checking out a bunch of stuff on a table. And everything smells funny. So they figure out it's all coming through the rectal pipeline. They're slacking on the squat and cough.
I'm not sure how they think. Yeah, Belle's all for it. She's volunteering.
Yeah, she's going to be the hero.
The visitors are bringing this stuff in because nobody comes and goes. I mean, Piper's furlough was like a one in a bazillion chance. So she thinks people are literally bringing it in rectally, right?
I think it's just there to show how kind of stupid the guards are. You know, they're smelling stuff on the table. Like, hey, this smells funny. This made them look stupid.
Did you see the stuffed animal?
Yeah.
I'm just not sure we could bring that stuffed animal in that way.
Well, Belle's going to keep it. I'm taking this home after we rip it open and see if anything's inside it. Stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we see Gina with Nikki. Gina's, like, protective over Nikki.
Well, they had a thing in season one, I believe it was season one, like a big thing, and they were a couple. And no, not Gina. Never mind. I'm thinking of Lorna. Never mind. Scratch that. You're right. Gina, I'm sorry, completely different thing I wanted to bring up. Gina is confronting Nikki over the heroin, over tucking it into her bra, because I think that was part of that scene when they were showing that Nikki was trying to hide her heroin when they were doing that sweep. And Gina saw her tuck it into her bra. And Nikki acts all offended, but Gina continues to follow her around. She is not going to drop it. She is not going to let her go.
Yeah, she's concerned about her. She's worried she's going to take it. She doesn't want her to do
that. That's exactly right. Well, right. Yeah, it's the love of her life. She told us last time, so sure she is.
So next we see Healy is interviewing Tiffany.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, do you know that was her first name?
I would have never called her that. No,
I would never either, so. But that's my new website that has all this info.
That's pretty good.
I'm scrolling now just to double check to make sure, but I think it's Tiffany. Of course, everyone that already knows this is like, oh, well, of course, dumbass, we already all knew that.
They call her, don't they call her like Doggett too or something?
That's
like
her
that?
Last name, Tiffany Doggett.
So where do we get Pennsylvania?
She's from the red, she's probably from the hills of Pennsylvania or Kentucky.
Okay.
Michelle, do you really need to ask why you would get the name Pennsylvania? Because she's from Arkansas?
No, I just didn't know. I mean, I kind of thought it might have had something to do with her name. I didn't know. That's just what I've called her from the beginning.
No, she's a redneck. She's like a redneck, you know, whatever. But Pennsylvania is derogatory to me.
I had no idea. Why?
What
I
if I
mean, I really don't know why. I'm not.
What if I
be...
called you Tennsylvania?
I don't care. You call me Michelle from Tennessee. What's, I mean, I don't know.
That's Tennsylvania? Much more respectful.
Oh, is okay. I don't know. I just never took it as anything derogatory or anything like that. I didn't know.
But Healy's talking to her. And
about starting that support group.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, he wants to do, and she says, there's some angry bitches in here. I mean, when he says the ladies could use it, I mean, that's just her straight-faced response. Well, there's some angry bitches in here.
Well, her other straight-faced response is when Healy says, do you know what I do? And she says, you fill out the paperworks.
Yeah, the paperworks for the shots.
So she thinks he's like a paper, he's a clerk.
She does. And he goes on to say that he is a counselor and he has to tell her. But I mean, we've heard that before, that he's a counselor. We also have to take the source of that, which is Pennsylvania, who, you know, she's not shown to be maybe the sharpest tool.
Pencil in the pencil case. Yeah, Healy's selfish. He's doing this for selfish reasons because it makes him feel like he's helping other people and makes him feel good. But I also think he likes seeing, and you know, sometimes we're all guilty of this, I guess, but seeing somebody else worse off than you makes you feel better. I think he's like a champion of that too. Seeing people worse off than him cheers him up.
Well, that's kind of sad.
Because think about it, he goes to that psychologist and she's like, she outmatches him. She's smarter than him. And she's like higher up on the social ladder than Healy. But he's up on the higher on the social ladder than these prisoners, I think. So it makes him feel better to feel like he's in charge and he's helping them.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the best place for a personality like that.
I didn't say it was, but I'm saying that that's what I think he gets off on.
Well, right. I think that's horrible to be in a place like that with these people who are so beaten down and for that to make you feel good. That's a character issue in my book anyway.
I give Pennsylvania a little bit of credit because you can tell she's kind of using him. Like she knows that she's just giving him the feel good. You know, like I'll be your little helper and I'll come to your little meetings.
I don't think she does. I don't think that. I think she likes Healy. I think she likes the attention he gives her. I think it's the weirdest relationship, but that's all we see in this whole series, pretty much, are these odd relationships. But I feel like she appreciates him in some way.
Well, she's pretty dumb, but I think in a way he's dumber. He's dumber in the whole male-female thing of female working her wiles over a unsuspecting male. She's got that over him hand and foot. He's maybe smarter because he had more education or something, but she's outfoxed him that way.
I can definitely see that. I don't disagree with that. But I think she likes him. And I think she tries to be honest with him. She tells him people aren't going to come to a support group without getting something. And he thinks getting the counseling will be the something that they get. But she...
Right.
She says no.
Getting
she says
the honor of my presence is good enough.
Right.
Well, V and her gang want the library real estate. So they're going up to Poussey to try to see if she'll buy into the gang or not. And Poussey stands up to them. She doesn't want to give it up.
Poussey says she's not a corner girl. And I thought that really resonated with those of us who are wired. I don't hear that word a lot, a corner girl or whatever, but or that phrase a lot, but after watching The Wire, I completely got what she was saying.
So I'm not a Wire watcher either. What's a corner girl?
Well, a corner, I think their corner guys mainly in there is who they put on the corner to sling their drugs.
Okay.
It's like you own the that corner. And so when she stands up to her, Poussey's mad because V is selling drugs. She was okay with the tobacco, I think. But she loves Nikki. She cares about these... No, she doesn't love Nikki. That's Gina that loves Nikki. But she doesn't like the hard drugs. She's pointed out that that she only sold weed. She didn't do this hard stuff. So I just don't think she has a lot of respect for the hard stuff, and she doesn't want to be involved in it.
Yeah, she was in love with Tasty, but I don't like the once you get slammed a couple times by Tasty, you know, being V's bitch and being V's muscle. Fuck that, man. Poussey should just say screw it. Then you're not my friend anymore. She's not acting like her friend. Her and Suzanne are just muscle for V. Fuck that. They've chosen that over her friendship. I don't like Poussey staying friends with Tasty and Suzanne because of this.
Yeah, and continuing to try to stay friends with them. But I think Tasty's kind of trying the same thing. I think she's trying to keep her friendship with Poussey.
Not very hard. Poussey's, well, she's burned too many bridges. If I were Poussey, if Tasty did that to me and I was Poussey, that would be the end of the friendship.
Well, yeah, she's definitely shown where her loyalties lie. Tasty has. But I don't know. I mean, can you really even... I mean, you can, but can you blame Tasty? I mean, that's her family.
Yeah,
that came
of course
there.
You can blame her. You say, hey, that's my friend. I don't want to treat her that way. Let's find a middle... You know, you can't... Poussey,
I mean,
has
Tasty
no friends in Tasty or... Maybe never. She had never a friend in Suzanne, but she has no friend in Tasty.
I agree, but we have to look at Tasty, the whole of Tasty, and how she was raised and everything. And I think they showed us that for a reason. And they showed us that because we have to know that V was her only family.
That's great. So that's your problem. I understand it. You're not my friend anymore. That's your life. You've chose. So you want to be with V? Great. Be with V. You're not my friend.
Okay.
You mentioned The Wire. I guess I heard on maybe it was The Bald Move. Orange is the New Cast is their podcast, but they talk about that psychologist of Healy also having been on The Wire.
I was trying to... Oh, yeah. The female, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know what she did, or was she a cop or something?
I think she was a cop. It's been a while since I've watched it, but I'm pretty sure she was a cop on there, yeah. Like one of the higher-ups or something, if I remember, but I wouldn't swear to that. But yeah, she was on there, that's right.
So those guys do it... Bald Move guys do a good Orange podcast too. Orange is the New Cast is what they do.
You got to see The Wire too, Mike. You should just start. Just break down and do it. Season 1, episode 1, go through. It's really good.
All right. As soon as we hang up, we'll get on that.
Thanks.
So Fig and Caputo are talking about the Mendez rape.
Yeah, they're like interrogating
Daya.
Yeah.
Do you think they really needed Caputo to leave the room, or do you think that was just Figueroa being her bitchy self?
I don't think Daya was going to say anything in front of Figueroa in front of Caputo, because Caputo's the one that walked in on him. Remember, he's the one that actually walked in on the act of her with Porn Stash. So I don't think she would have said that was consensual in front of him, maybe.
So
she didn't want to say it in front of Fig at all. But
why did Figueroa need to know that? If she encouraged it, why do you think she needed to know that? or want to know that?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that made a difference to her one way or another. It's like she said, based on the law, it doesn't matter. She was unable to give consent due to her physical circumstances. So I have no idea why her encouraging him or it being consensual, at least in Di's mind, would make any difference at all to Figueroa. No
idea. Just being nosy?
I don't, maybe. Maybe she was. But then she could tell it was really hard for Di to come out with this. Di didn't want to implicate him. She didn't want to say the things that she said that she, you know, had to say. And she was really struggling with it. And then Fig, in her offhanded way, says, well, congratulations, you've just ruined a man's life.
Yeah, she sets it up so that Daya doesn't have to say yes. She says, no matter what, it's a rape. It's just so you know that, it's going to be rape. But I want to know if it was consensual. Did you encourage him? She could have said no. If it doesn't matter, you know. Anyway.
But what did you think? I mean,
I think Daya's
just... Did you want her to say no?
I think Daya's honest. I think she feels a little bad about Mendez.
She feels
guilty.
Really bad. Yeah, she does. And I think she kind of likes him. And I think that makes her feel even more guilty. She kept his card. So...
Next, there isn't much comedy in this episode, but we do see a little bit of comedy in the next scene with Maria Ruiz and her baby with the quiet husband. Mm-hmm. Brings the baby in, and he's getting some problems from the bank. I guess he's made a couple late payments or interest payments are late, and she tells him how to deal with that clerk at the bank. If that clerk won't listen to you, get the wooden bat, not the metal bat, the wooden bat.
Okay, what's that all about, first of all? I mean, I know the difference, obviously, in a wooden bat and a metal bat, but what's the difference if you're going after somebody?
It's just stupid funny. It's like, if you hit her with the wooden bat, it won't leave any, you know, it'll leave less of a mark or something. I don't know if you could hear it, but as they switch scenes over to Sophia, you could still hear them talking in the background because they're all in that big meeting room. Here's what she says. She says, you get the wooden bat, not the metal bat, the wooden bat, and get the trash bag, not the black. You get the black kind, not the see-through kind. So she's like giving him these crime tips on how to like hurt somebody, but not hurt them enough that you would get caught. You know, it's just funny. It's just stupid comedy. Get the wooden bat, not the metal bat. Get the trash bag, the black kind, not the see-through kind. Like the blood, so the blood doesn't show through.
I mean, that's horrible. She's sitting in a prison visitation room holding her six-month-old. That's horrible.
Yeah, but it's especially funny because she's like this pretty, pretty Hispanic lady, and she's holding the baby, and he's the thug. You know, he's the free guy. He's the one who can leave, and he's got the gangbanger signs and the teardrop and the shaved head. And, you know, he just looks way more criminal than she does. But she's giving him the tips on how to be a man and stand up and don't take shit from people.
Yeah.
So next we see Sophia with her son, Mike, or his son, Mike, her son, his son, whatever. But she wants him to talk, but he's pretty quiet.
He's sullen. Yeah.
So they're going to play cards, and that seems to be the breakthrough. She lets him be competitive, I thought. Was being competitive was his path to communication.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, this is also where Piper is talking to the reporter. I think his name's Alexander. I've called him that the whole time, so I'll continue whether it is or not.
Nance. And yeah, his last name's Nance.
Yeah. And she's telling him the things that are not being done. And this is where he goes into that he suspects the jail... Okay, tell me if I got this right, okay? He suspects the prison, is paying inflated prices to specific contractors who are in turn giving kickbacks to the Figueroa campaign.
Yeah.
Did I get all that right?
Yeah, that's what we thought before. So whatever he suspects, you know, that's what it is. That's the clarification. Right.
I just thought before she was just skimming the money. I thought she was taking it directly. I did not know it was going through the contractors. I don't know why I didn't know that now looking back on it. But since he said it, that just kind of clicked into place with me. So
yeah, and he needs invoices for evidence, and Piper doesn't want to risk her safety for doing that.
No, and she looks at him, she's disgusted. She's in prison, and he wants invoices from her. I mean, really? How could you even ask somebody?
Well, he wants to advance his journalism career by getting this big story, and he's asking her to put her neck on the line. He's just, you know, he's asking. If he doesn't ask, she won't do it.
I suppose, but I mean, how on earth is a prisoner, and of course we find out later on, but how on earth is a prisoner supposed to get a hold of invoices from an assistant warden's office?
Just get in there in a file cabinet. It's a lot easier than he could never do it.
Well,
She's already snuck around and found like evidence of poor construction in the electronics and the outlets and stuff.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing as getting in the assistant warden's office. It's like he's just asking for ridiculous. She's never even been in there that they've shown. He's been in there, and she's never even been in the room, and they expect a prisoner.
Well, what if she's a clerk? What if she's like Andy Dufresne? She's a clerk for the warden. You know, there's a way she might be able to do it. He's just asking her.
I guess. He's asking for a lot.
So Fig catches Nance on the way out. She says, what are you doing here? What are you digging around for? And I can just look and see who you met with, so you might as well just tell me. So he tells her it's Piper.
Yeah, he says they have mutual friends. And that really comes back to bite her later. Piper, I mean. So that's significant conversation, that little two-minute blurb that he has there with Fig.
So Gina's still watching Nikki, and Nikki tells Lorna, I guess, that she's after her puffs. She's eating cheese puffs. Does Lorna know that Nikki has the heroin problem?
No,
so that's her cover up for that.
Oh, she knows she has the problem, I think, but she doesn't know she has the drugs. Yeah, no.
So they make kind of a joke about Gina stalking her, but Gina's just watching out for her. She doesn't want her to relapse.
Right. This is where Gina goes in and says, you have to take it to Red. Gina's not going to stop tailing her. She is literally tailing her, and it is not going to stop until she takes it to Red.
So
this is where they bring up the girl who died. Remember the girl with braids that we talked about before? Her name was Trisha, and I finally found that out again. That she brings her up, too, because Trisha got the drugs in there, and she died from that. The one that Porn Stash made look like a suicide or whatever.
Well, whatever Gina's doing with Nikki, it's wearing her down a little bit by little bit. She's really starting to realize she cares about her, and it is wrong to take this drug. So I think she helps her a lot by haunting her and following her.
I do too. I think she was a good, good friend for doing that for her.
So Lorna gets a visitor, and it's the stalky. It's that Christopher dude that she's been on one date with and stalks him for weeks and weeks after that.
Was that as heartbreaking to you as it was to me to watch that scene?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Smiles when she's still like a whack job. She smiles when she sees him. And like, how could she possibly think this is going to be a good visit? He knows he's going to kill her, man. If he says he's going to kill her if she does it ever again, that, you know, this is all just lunacy. And one date, you're a stalker psycho bitch. He's slightly insane, too. He's like yelling and getting angry in the middle of this prison. He's not going to get very far with that.
Well, he's not. But to play the other side of this, I mean, I love Lorna. I've loved her from the beginning. She's the sweetest character there. And caveat. But she did try to blow up his fiance in a car. I mean, I don't think his anger is irrational, right? I mean, it's certainly a rational anger.
It's displaying it at the prison, and the prison visiting room is irrational, though.
Yeah, but what would you do? I mean, you've
nothing.
All the...
nothing. She's in jail.
Come on, Mike. No, she just broke out and went to.
So you think his meeting her in the prison waiting room was an effective way of stopping her?
Of course not. And I think it was horrible. I don't know that there is any stopping her, but I can understand after having gone through all the proper channels to get her out of his life because she was a clear and present threat to his family, I can understand his losing his patience. I couldn't help at the same time feeling so sorry for her because she has kept up this whole charade of who she is and her fiance, and that's who she is there. And it's who we thought she was for a season and a half. And suddenly, you know, he comes there and points it out. Plus, he realizes when he gets there that she's still carrying on the charade in there.
Yeah, you can't deal with a crazy person. So going there to try to talk to a crazy person in front of, and getting mad at her in front of the staff and the other visitors, it's crazy. It's crazy on his behalf.
It is. It's not wise, but what else could he do?
Of course, they have to.
He's already said he went to the police about her breaking into his house.
They have to inject some humor in this as Nikki sees him through the window, like, oh, is that the guy? Is that the guy? Like, she's excited to see the guy that she's heard all about.
Humor. That's not.
Yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't. That was horrible. There was nothing humorous about that. That was the horrible part.
All right. This is irredeemable with you. But Nikki tells her it could have been a triple sentence. You're crazy. Don't do that anymore. He's mean.
No, it would have been. Would have been a triple sentence.
Well, yeah, of course. She didn't get caught. We all know that. But she says the final verdict of it all is that he's mean. You're a sweet, beautiful girl. And Lorna says, nobody's going to love me. And Nikki says, I do. And that was a pretty touching moment after all that. So
it was. And remember, she probably does love her.
Well, I hope she loves her for the fact that she's kind of this lost soul and she's trying to be nice to her and help her out of this mess versus just loving her in a selfish way.
She loves her. She loves her in a love way. They had a thing. And I think she loves her in that way.
Okay. I'm going to hope that she wants her to be okay after this confrontation with this guy, Christopher, and wants that part of it to be okay.
I'm sure she does. Of course she does. But don't you remember that whole thing that they were together and Lorna quit being with Nikki because when she only had so many months until she got out and it was a whole don't want...
Yeah. Sometimes the tables in life get turned 180 degrees. Like somebody breaks your heart, you love them, and they break up with you, and you feel bad, and you feel like, oh, that person doesn't care for me, and they let me go, and they let me be alone. And then you see them need something sometime in the future, and you feel for them like, I see them feeling pain, and I don't want them to be painful. I want them to be okay. That's a different kind of love, and I'm hoping that this is what the message was in this scene, is that Nikki wants Lorna to just be okay. You know, this guy, Christopher, you're a beautiful, sweet girl. Be okay. You don't need him. I hope she wants that more than just her to be, you know, expressing this love that she has for Lorna. It's just like wanting someone to be okay.
Okay. I've never thought about it, you know, as far as the different kinds of love that way. She loves her. Can't it just be simple?
It can't be,
yes,
Michelle.
It can be simple.
Well, it could be. It could be simple, but I think that's less intelligent than it being like a deeper level above all that. Like, you broke up with me and I was mad at you and hurt before, but now you're hurt and I want you to feel okay. That's not the same love. That's not like, okay, we're back to our love affair again, right? Because I love you. No, it's her.
Oh, my gosh. No, Mike, that's not what I'm saying. If you love somebody, you love them, I think. And I think if you love somebody, you love them forever because you love them.
That's childish to me. That's simplistic.
Oh, my gosh. God, it is not childish. How is that childish?
If you have romantic love? If you have romantic love with somebody and it's over because they've spurned you, you get past it and you feel bad for a while, but you feel like kind of neutral. But then if you see they have a need in the future, it's not that romantic love again. It's that it's care for them. You care about them. That's not the same love. It's like a different kind of love. It's not the I love you forever. I loved you that one time, so I'm going to love you forever. It's different. It's a concern. It's a caring type of love.
Okay. We're going to have to agree.
That's how I see the scene, and I think that's why it was written this way. They're not going to hold hands and be in a relationship again.
I think they will. I think they could.
Okay, well, that's
but,
different.
But that doesn't even have anything to do with it. I don't see the difference. I think that if you love somebody and you genuinely love somebody, look, to me, love is wanting what's better for the person, even if that's not you, and it doesn't have anything to do with you. So if Nikki loved her and saw that Lorna wanted somebody else, then that would be better, and it was a better situation for Lorna, then Nikki would step back from that, because that's what people who genuinely, not this...
But that's not what we're talking about here. We're just talking about Lorna being with... Lorna being with somebody that's bad for her, and she's got the whole wrong set of emotions, and Nikki wants her to have the right set of emotions.
Right, but Nikki didn't know that. When Lorna stepped away from Nikki, it was because Lorna told Nikki, that she was in love with Christopher. Nikki stepped away because Nikki loved, if assuming that she loved her, she loved her. And then you don't stop feeling that genuine love for somebody just because...
Well, why do some people put a flaming bag of dog shit on people's porch then?
Because that's not... There's nothing about love and a flaming bag of poo. I mean, how do we even relate those two things?
Same episode.
Oh, okay. Well, it must be true then, if it's in the same episode.
Okay, next scene. Piper calls Larry and needs to know who it is. She's decided she can't just live with the fact that it's somebody she knows and doesn't know who it is. She needs to know.
And she's leaving a message. What's the point?
I don't know. Plus, V and Crazy muscle in on her and makes me hate Crazy even more for being this henchman of V. And I really don't like Crazy. Just like I said, I didn't like Tasty. I don't like what V's made them into, but I also don't like them choosing to be more on V's side than on other people's sides.
I agree.
So next we see a flashback of Polly and Piper at Piper's house. Did you look around Piper's house in that scene, Michelle? Do you remember anything about it?
No, not specifically. I mean, I don't know.
I thought it was pretty cool. They were eating pizza and beer, which was kind of anti-girly to me. It didn't seem like two girls sitting around talking would have pizza and beer. Especially Piper's like a white wine drinker. You'd think they'd have wine or something.
I don't know. Pizza and beer are girly enough.
Maybe. She had lots of plants, which seemed okay. And she had unmatched furniture, which I was trying to decide if that was cool or not cool. And I put possibly cool.
See, I thought it was Polly's place, but I guess it wasn't.
No, the door rings and Piper answers it.
Right.
The unmatched furniture was possibly cool. And then books all over the place, books on the floor, books on some of the furniture. That's definitely cool. And so Piper and Polly are talking, and Piper says, "I'm not gay. Maybe the guys are just bad in bed," but she had just discovered what sex is supposed to be. So that must have just been after that time with Alex in the very first scene.
Right? Yeah, that, or after she met her in the bar and they went to the bathroom. One or the other. Yeah, I would think it was really close to that time.
But that whole time frame was like all together anyway. It was probably a few days apart.
Right.
So she gets the poop in the bag on the front porch, and who in the hell smashes the bag with their foot? If it's something on fire in your porch, you don't stomp on it with your foot. Even if you know the poop in the bag trick, you don't stomp on it with your foot.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Have you ever had poop in a bag on your porch?
No.
On fire? Yeah, me either, so.
But if I see a fire, I don't stomp on it with my foot either.
I might stomp on a fire.
All right, you're prime candidate for this then. And of course, Polly, she's like, who does this? And Polly says, well, my brother used to do it all the time.
Yeah. And then they have to discuss whether it's human or dog. And the funny part of that to me was they would rather it have been dog.
Well, yeah, that is.
And I'm not sure I get that.
Well, you don't want the person. You want Sylvie's poop on your foot.
Do you want dog poop?
More than human poop, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, why? Absolutely.
I don't understand why. What is more appealing
it's
about
less
dog
personal.
Poop?
It's less icky. Personal.
Okay. Okay, so Rover's poop is okay.
Well, first of all, they determine that it's Sylvie. Polly's like, who the hell would do this? And then Piper tells her it's the Sylvie, this Alex's ex-girlfriend. And that lesbians are insane.
And it's funny that Polly just totally gets it and Piper's just completely thrown off by it. And she's like, you know, people poop in a bag.
Well,
and
her brother used
fire.
To do it. Polly's brother used to do it.
Yeah. Have you ever known anybody that's ever done
never.
That? I've never known. Okay, good.
It's a pretty known, it's a well-known prank. I mean, it's a prank, but I mean, have
well,
you ever,
sure, I've heard of it.
Have you ever thrown toilet paper rolls up into a tree?
I plead the fifth.
Everybody knows about that. I've never done that, but it's not like, oh, who would throw toilet paper up in a tree? Like, you know, it's a prank, you know,
well, there's
poop.
A difference in poop and toilet.
Yeah,
well,
but my point
okay,
is some.
Mind.
My point is there are some pranks that you know about that you don't necessarily have to have done to understand.
Okay.
So that's what this is. Bennett and Daya are discussing Pornstash going to jail. And Daya makes me crazy again here because she's like, real men claim their kids, meaning that I guess Bennett should go to jail because if he claimed that kid, he would be in Pornstash's shoes, right? Statutory
right.
rape. She's a dipshit.
Yeah.
Daya's a dumbass.
This whole thing, it makes me tired and frustrated. I'm not sure.
This podcast?
Sometimes, but no. This situation between Daya and Bennett, I don't know what she wants. I don't know what she expects. She is, like I said before, many, many episodes ago, she is hot and cold, hot and cold.
Well, she doesn't know what she wants.
Well, good point. Good point. But I get frustrated watching the two of them.
Yep. She's a hot ball of crazy. Soso in the next scene is looking pretty weak from her hunger, and Yoga Jones talks to her, and they're talking about the shoe being torture and how Yoga Jones says she's proud of Soso and she's a true activist. And then we see Jane, Sister Jane, in the background there. She's like quiet, but she knows what happens to true activists because that's why she's in there.
Well, and I think she's kind of thinking she'll, you know, stand up for it too. And Yoga Jones also pointed out that, and I thought this was kind of sad, and it'll play out a little bit later on, not in this episode, but she points out that her friend just got put in shoe. And we're assuming she's talking about Janae, right, Watson? And she talks about how she's not a violent offender, and they're using shoe as a torture and a timeout, and how that's not right, and how she's proud of her. And then later on, of course, we see that Yoga Jones talks to Janae Watson about it. And anyway, it kind of plays out there, but she's really standing up for something here. So more than just, I don't want to shower, she's standing up for something. And I thought that was kind of important.
So you see Healy and Pensatucky all alone in the Safe Place therapy group.
Yep. That's sad. Just them. They just kind of show it, and that's it.
Well, it turns out Pensatucky was right. If you don't give them something, they're not going to come.
Yep.
And Piper gets a visit from Polly. At first I thought Larry had sent Polly in to weasel his way in and just say, or weasel his answer to Piper in, here's the answer to your question, Polly's going to tell you. But that wasn't the case.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think that. I thought Polly just was guilty. She's having this friend guilt, and so she wants to go make nice with Piper. I don't know that she was going to tell her anything.
But she doesn't tell her, but she tells her.
Yeah.
So Polly's big pregnancy ass is gone. She tells Piper that Pete took off for Alaska and Larry helped, and they're all just kind of, they're dancing around each other. Like, you don't deserve this. Like, what do you mean? Have you seen Larry a lot? And we had sex at the wake and he slept with somebody else. Oh, I know.
She said that to her, and Polly like swallows her tongue for a minute. And then she says, well, we almost did.
Well, she has no reason to think she has to be careful around Polly.
Well, of course not. Of course not. This is definitely Polly's awkwardness.
So Polly's awkwardness about saying we're not really that close. That dance ends and Piper finally gets it. She sees like, oh, that's the friend.
Oh, I know. I know. It hits her like a ton of bricks. And what a terrible thing. What a terrible thing to sit there and have your best friend sit across from you. And you know that.
Yep. So we see a flashback of Piper and Alex, and they talk about Sylvie, and here's a mirror of when we're talking about mirrors. I think Sylvie and Christopher are mirrors. They're both like the kind of the objects of the lovers of people in this show that don't work out.
And yeah, I guess I can see that in a way.
And I wrote this, that sometimes the I don't love X, but I do love you is a really magical potion thing to say. It's kind of a really turn-on thing to say. Like, I never loved him, but I do love you. That's what Alex says to Piper. No, I never loved her, but I do love you.
Yeah, I don't like that. That feels very manipulating to me.
Well, and then she tells
Piper to say it back.
There's no reason to say it. You know, it's one of those, it is manipulative. There's no reason to say it. Just say, I love you. It doesn't matter if you loved X before you or what.
Exactly.
So Piper pulls a Walter White on the cinder block wall and she's punching it. She's just punching it. And
yeah, she'd have to be pretty strong to do that. That would be, that's a rough one.
Well, I just went through the thing I was doing with Better Call Saul, and that one of the episodes was Walt had just realized he didn't have the cancer, and he punched the paper towel machine.
Right.
In the bathroom and bloodies his hand on it. But Red sees this, and Piper tells Red that she knows now that it was Polly, it was the close friend. And Red gives her some great advice. She leaves, but not before giving her this advice. Don't drink the poison and wait for it to kill your enemy. Stop punching the wall and plot your revenge.
Yeah, that's. I thought the don't drink the poison and wait for it to kill your enemy was great advice. The plot your revenge, I don't know.
Well, it's the literal translation of don't drink the poison and wait for it to kill your enemy. Like, put the poison in another place where it's more effective.
I suppose, but.
What do you expect from Red?
Well, I don't expect anything different from
Red.
She's
not Brooke. She's not going to say, love everybody and hold hands or Yoga Jones. She's Red.
I agree. But I don't know that Piper has a lot of revenge to plot, although I think she did great at it here in just a minute.
So Poussey has a secret stash of hooch in the library, and it looks freaking awful. It's in an old olive jar, and it's fruit and all kinds of other stuff fermenting, and it's in a jar. Ugh, it looked terrible.
And look, I know I'm like a germaphobe. I realize this, but she is sitting on that, and I know you probably didn't even notice, and most people didn't, but this is the kind of thing that goes through my mind. She is sitting on the floor with her hands, like, wherever, on the floor, and then she gets up, and she gets in that ceiling tile, and she pulls this jar down, and then she sticks her whole hand down in this jar. And that freaks me out so bad, I can't even tell you. Anyway.
It's alcohol. It sterilizes it.
No, no, and no.
So next we see V checking out Red's greenhouse, looking for the tunnel or the way in. She finds the pantyhose. What do you think? Do you think the pantyhose in the dirt was like a fake out?
No, 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 no. It wasn't in dirt. It was in a bag of manure.
Okay,
and
well, whatever.
No, that's important. That's why all the stuff smelled like poop.
Yeah. I thought
that was it. She'd been hiding it in the bags of manure now.
Yeah,
because
I know.
Before,
but
yeah,
I'm asking is, do you think she left that like relatively obviously to find for anyone who might wander in there?
Why would she do that?
Because it was a real benign thing. It was pantyhose.
Well, Red doesn't import anything that's not benign, does she? I mean, it's lip gloss and eyeshadow and pantyhose. Pantyhose? Who wants to wear pantyhose in the best of, you know, like social situations? Why on God's green earth would you wear pantyhose in prison?
I don't know.
Who would
I
want
might
the pantyhose.
Well, but V finds the floorboards and Red catches her, and V says, "Tunnel, that's so Bugs Bunny." There you go,
yeah,
Bugs Bunny
funny.
Popping up twice, Michelle.
There you go.
So V tries to appeal to Red for her friendship, claiming that, you know, they used to be friends, but Red has changed. Red, you've changed so much. That's why we're not friends anymore. Trying to manipulate her to think it's her fault.
Well, and she also says she's changed too. She says, "Don't you think people can change?" You know, and she's walking out. She's all contrite and she's got her hands up in the air like, "You got me, Red. You got me, Red."
Yeah,
and that's what she leaves Red with that thought. Don't you think people can change? Like, I've changed. Let's share this. Don't you think people can change? I thought that was important because of what happens.
It's
next.
More of V's bullshit, though, because it's like V getting fake, being afraid of being beat up by Gloria that time. She's just like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's more of V's crap, but it plays with Red's mind. Because we'll see that in just a minute.
So Nikki gets the heroin out and she opens it. She's sniffing it. I thought she was going to take it at that point. She's really,
I did too.
She's wrestling with the decision. And Red is conflicted in the greenhouse. They go right back to the greenhouse scene. And Red's sitting there like thinking about what we were just talking about. Like, should we be friends? Did I change? And Nikki gives her the heroin and tells her where it came from, and that settles the conflict with Red. She just realizes what a manipulator V is.
Right. That answered the question that V has not changed at all. And so she knows not to trust her, do business with her, whatever.
Yeah, it's a reminder to Red that you should never, ever trust V. She'll do anything, yeah, including
a
ruin.
Perfect. Yes. Perfect quick reminder in exactly the moment she needed it. So Nikki helped Red. I mean, helped her, you know, that's up for debate, I suppose, but helped her more than she knew at that particular moment.
So what do you know, Michelle? Poussey is sick from that hooch that she drank with her hand dirty from the carpet.
She's sick. Well, see, there you go. Should have washed her hands. No, but she's also sick and drunk.
Well, that's why she's sick. She's not sick from the germs on the floor. She's
we don't know that.
Yeah, we do.
We've not cultured her vomit. We don't know that.
So Poussey is sick from the hooch that she drinks, and V tells her off. Or she tells V off, and V turns crazy on her. Point number four, three, or four, or five against crazy. Hating points again. She's just a hitman for V.
Yes, she is. It's terrible. But this, I thought, was a significant scene because it's also where Black Cindy comes in and she looks on disapprovingly. It's like the first, other than when she first met V, when she didn't like her specifically, it's like the first time that she looks on the stuff that V is doing disapprovingly. I don't think the girls like specifically Poussey being treated that way.
I don't think any of these women like V. I think they're afraid of her, and if they're on her team, it's out of fear and like, their bread is buttered on that side, but I don't think any of these women like V. I think it's just like power. It's like the, you know, they're getting something in return for being on her hit squad.
Yeah, I agree.
So Piper calls Cal, I guess. She's trying to call Cal, but Neri answers the phone and tells her that Cal's out foraging for greens.
Well, aren't we all?
And Piper says, "You're my sister-in-law, dude. Do me a favor." And the favor is to put the flaming bag of shit on Polly's porch.
So that was great.
She takes Red's advice and puts it into play immediately. That was pretty cool.
That was great. And if that's what we're talking about for revenge, that was perfect.
Now, Polly does the right thing. She squirts it and puts it out. She doesn't stomp on it.
Well, Polly's an expert in the flaming poo bag.
Yeah, she's more experienced, I guess.
Yeah.
So Gina's proud of Nikki.
Oh, my God. But wait. They are in an apartment building. Did no one think about lighting a bag of poo outside somebody's door? I mean, what if Polly hadn't been home? Or what if the poo bag had caught the apartment building on fire or something? That could have really ended tragically. I could see it like on a concrete front porch, maybe it'd be a more safer. Not that I'm advocating the lighting of any poo on anybody's front porch. However, I can see how that would be a different situation than going inside an apartment building. Is that crazy or was that just me?
Yeah, it's just you.
Okay.
We really should warn our listeners, if you do put a flaming bag of poo on somebody's doorstep, make sure you put a fire break completely around it, 360 degrees.
Yeah, let's just please not light any poo bags on anybody's front porch ever.
So Gina is proud of Nikki for her restraint, and that was a feel good. And Caputo and Pornstash are talking now about the James Franco movie, 127 Hours, about the guy who cuts his arm off to save himself from the rock he's trapped in.
Did you ever see that movie?
No, I heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, me too. Okay, I didn't know.
You two haven't seen it, or you two have seen it?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
I don't want to see a guy saw his arm off with a pocket knife.
Well, it's a reenactment. I mean, you watch like Godfather, right? You don't want to see that kind of stuff.
That's
either,
a reenactment. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I could see it. Not that I would really want to sit and like watch that or anything, but.
But somehow in there, the comparison of James Franco sawing his arm off with a pocket knife is equal to Mendez and his bare ass fucking Daya.
He can't get that image out of his mind. The funniest part of this, now this was funny to me because Pornstash is sitting there the whole time like eating Skittles and he doesn't even miss a beat. He's like opening his bag of Skittles and like pouring them into his hand and like knocking back a handful. It was Skittles, right? Something like that?
I have no idea.
And he doesn't quit. The whole time he's getting chewed out by Caputo.
Well, you only got so much time to eat your lunch. It's on his lunch break.
Okay.
It's actually morning, so he's on some kind of break. Or he's in called in, whatever. He's a base guy, this Pornstash Michelle. He's going to eat when he wants to eat, and he screws when he wants to screw, and he drives fast when he wants to drive. You know,
I don't think he ever gets to screw who he wants to screw. I think that's why he's in love with Daya. I think Pornstash has probably almost never in his whole life had a woman approach him and offer herself to him. That's my take on it. I could be completely misreading this, but I think that has completely messed him up and altered his whole personality because he has found a woman who wanted him. And it has turned him into who he now is toward her.
Well, Daya is pregnant with a mustachio little shit. Now, that's not a very nice thing to say by Caputo about Daya's little baby.
No, but it's not.
That's the name game for this episode.
Yep.
I don't think that baby's going to have a porn stash. I hope not anyway.
Well, it's not his baby. So, of course, it won't.
Well, good point.
Even if it would, but yeah.
So, he gets fired, and he's like, oh, well, okay. I guess I'll just get out of here. And he's like, well, hold on a second. You're also under arrest. Now, here's where I have a question. Why wouldn't they do a DNA test, or why wouldn't Pornstash insist on it, even if he knew he was guilty? Instead of just going off and being guilty, why wouldn't you say, give me a DNA, you know, I want a DNA test?
Okay, I didn't even think about that, but let me just kind of play the other side with that, because there's nobody else in there except Bennett, and he thinks Bennett is essentially innocent of everything. Bennett and O'Neill, right? And O'Neill is with Belle. So that's the only guys that they're really showing. The one other guy, I don't remember his name, like the balding guy. But
he's going to go to jail, Michelle. What about Healy? What about Caputo? Just say, give me a test. I know I had sex with her. I know in my head that I had sex with her. It's probably me, but I want a test.
Well, he probably would, but they don't do that while you're still pregnant, do they? Or do they now?
I have no idea. I've never had to worry about that, but he just folded too easily, I think. And then why does he wink at Bennett on his way through? I mean, has he just lost his mind? I love this woman. He does exactly what Daya wants. He proclaims his love at every cost, you know, no hesitation.
Yeah, he starts ranting at her, you know, wait for me.
No tuna fish, no soft cheese, wait for me, baby. Like, she's going to wait for him. Okay, here's how it's going to work. You're going to get out of jail first, take care of the baby, and while you're taking care of the baby, wait for me to get out of jail, and then we'll be perfectly happy forever after.
Is she going to get out of jail first? I don't know.
I have no idea.
How long did you go to jail for this? I don't know. But wait for me wouldn't necessarily mean because you're in jail. It might mean because he didn't want her to be with somebody else. I don't know. But
no, you can't miss that. He's going to jail. Wait for me. Wait for me to get out of jail.
Yeah, but who knows? How long is she even in there for?
But that's the meaning behind wait for me.
Okay.
I'm looking up Daya to see what... Do you know why Daya is in jail?
They haven't... I don't think they've shown us.
She's serving time alongside her mother. Shown they're both sleeping with her mom's drug dealer boyfriend. Yeah, they don't say exactly why.
Yeah. So, do you know why you don't eat soft cheese when you're pregnant?
No.
Soft cheeses are less acidic. They contain more moisture, and it's a more favorable environment, evidently, for harmful bacteria like Listeria.
You're reading that. You're not knowing that.
No, I did know it. Well, I knew it, but then I looked it up. I'm not actually reading it. The fish, I think, is because of the mercury. You're not supposed to have the mercury, and you can have a little bit of fish, but not a lot of fish. But the soft cheese, when my oldest daughter got pregnant, that was like a new thing that I had never went through with a pregnancy. So when she got pregnant about the soft cheese, I was like, what are you talking about? Why can't you have, brie or whatever soft cheese?
So why does Pornstache wink at Bennett?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm proud of myself. I'm a man and I got a woman pregnant.
Yes, I think he's just, I mean, his chest is puffed out. He's happy. He was so happy when Caputo told him that Daya was pregnant. He was happy.
I guess. Yeah, he's just stupidly, like, macho.
Yeah, I mean, just happy. It was his whole, I'm in love, and I can't believe it. Now my girlfriend's pregnant, and he's just like puffed up like a puffer fish. He's happy.
So next episode is Take a Break from Your Values. It's episode 11 in season 2 of 13. So three more to go.
Just three.
So that's it for this episode. We are at westcoastproject.com or Scathing Tweets and Michelle from TN on Twitter and Facebook/Westcoast Project. What else, Michelle? What's the last orange thought for the week?
I think it's important. One last thing, and we didn't really touch on it very much, but how... Once this goes out, in the whole thing with after Caputo has told Pornstache that he's going to be arrested and everything, and before he does the walk of shame out the hallways.
Walk of pride for him.
And walk of pride / shame, right, being escorted out under arrest in between all the prisoners who are looking at him. We kind of flash to Figueroa for a minute, and she is even using this as another stepping stone. we at Litch or whatever prison do not tolerate blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, everything about it is just this. It's, she uses everything. She talks about how there's rogue correctional officers and stuff like that. And it was funny because when he's not funny, but telling, he walks past all these Latino women and they all look at him. They know the story. I don't know.
You had to ruin my ending for that.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them look at him like, ooh, what a creep. And some of them look at him like they're smiling almost.
But what do you think about the way Daya looks at him? That is exactly what she wanted Bennett to do. She wanted Bennett to scream at her about tuna fish and cheese. And she actually looks at Bennett when he walks out. And Bennett looks at her and she looks away.
You mean at Mendez?
No, Bennett. She looks at Bennett right before he goes off. She looks over at him after Mendez has walked out. After Porn Stash has walked out, she looks over at Bennett. And then she looks away from it.
Like, you couldn't have done that as good as he just did.
That's exactly what I heard.
Well, that's
her
why
say.
She's a dipshit.
Right. I don't disagree with that.
All right. Well, did you say there's no music at the end of this one? No special music?
For the first time? For the only episode in season two, it just kind of plays like their standard music, I think. And there was nothing on the music site, certainly, that indicated anything special for this. It was just...
Let's find out. Yeah, just Porn Stashy music. Wasn't that the music they were playing when he pulled up in his Camaro?
Well, remember, that was the specific... That Camaro... I don't know.
But it sounds like Porn Stashy, like rock, 70s rock.
That's what we'll call it, Porn Stashy 70s rock. I hope to be back, I should be back with my better microphone next week, so hopefully I won't sound so tinny and like I'm, what did you say, outside of a telephone booth?
Yeah, you sound like a telephone booth, an old-fashioned telephone booth with the door shut, and you're outside it trying to talk
on
the phone.
That's pretty sad. Yeah,
just be careful coming back from Florida to make sure that you make sure the bridge is there because Bugs Bunny sawed it off and it's drifted away. All right, Michelle, this is way too long, so
I know.
Have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wrapped around each other.